good and terrible.
And welcome to the Interracial John Podcast. I'm your host, Leslie Mack, and I'm joined, as always,
by a very white guy.
And he's very white indeed.
I had to put the voice of God on it. Sound effects today.
Oh, my goodness.
You're in for a treat.
Too many toys. Too many toys. We are very excited for this episode because we have the one and only Mel, one half of the Good and Terrible Podcast. What's going on, Mel?
Hey, I'm excited to be here.
Oh my gosh.
So glad that y'all invited me. I'm so terrible. I always worry about being invited to nice places. So thank you for having me.
You so don't know our funny. Place that well.
Yeah, we're not.
Don't
that
sweat
nice.
It.
You're good.
And you said you feel terrible, and I was going to ask you: are you the good or the terrible part? Because I've heard a few shows. I haven't listened to. Go ahead.
People always ask us that: who's the good and who's the terrible? We're both.
That's kind of the point. That's right.
Yeah, we. We occasionally we're very different. Like CJ and I have my partner. I'm just Siege on Twitter. You should follow her. She's hilarious. We're both 30 something women. Of course, she's in her mid 30s. I'm in my late 30s. We're both moms. We're both divorced. We're both black as fuck. So we have like all these things. Like we have these similarities, but we're also like we have really varying interests. And so we're both terrible, but in very different ways. But we're awesome in different ways, too. So
Boom. It
makes for a good mix.
Yes.
I hear you.
Know what you're going to get with
us. Just don't have any Benoit balls shipped by Amazon to your house.
Listen. We're going to start, because we were supposed to do this at the beginning of the year, and we got sidetracked. We're going to start getting people to send us their reviews on these things, and we're going to read them on the air.
Oh, my God, that's brilliant.
A review of Benoit balls?
No, of just sex toys.
Just the sex toys in general.
Oh, I love it.
I like it. Like, but reader great. Reviews?
Yeah, we're going to do
listener reviews.
We're going to get our listeners to email us when they try stuff anonymously.
Yes.
Of course.
Anonymous.
Unless they want us to read their name.
They're a freak.
Right, because some people like to let the freak flag fly.
Right.
I don't judge that. So, but yeah, we got to get some of those reviews popping.
I love
Maybe
it.
One of those anonymous reviews will be one of us, but we'll never tell.
Love it. That's hilarious.
Yes, we'll never tell. So if you're looking to find Mal, you can find her on Twitter and Instagram at beauty_Jackson. And you can find the podcast at thegoodandterribleshow.com. And they're also on the Cold Slither Podcast Network. And your Tumblr is redbeandreams.tumblr.com. Cool. Awesome. So Drew is really excited because we have you on this week.
Mm-hmm.
We have Karen from the Black Guy Who Tips next week.
Yep.
Oh, my boo.
And we are having in 2 weeks, Mike and Kim from the Something in Common podcast. So he's had 3 weeks in a row with multiple black women on the show. He's super duper.
I'm here for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you got some lippy black women coming your way, too.
Heavy hitters.
Woo! I love Karen.
She's the bomb.
She's one of the people. Karen is so great because she's one of the first people outside of like the because we have like the Cold Slither sphere, and so you know, of course, Jamal helped us and all that good stuff, and that was dope. But she's one of the people who are outside of our immediate sphere who just really reached out to us and were like, "What y'all are doing is great. Keep doing it, and anything I can do to help you, I will." And she's held true to that almost a year later. We're looking at a year in July, and Karen has always just been so great, so supportive. She's and us, and I love Rod too,
of course.
But it's like you hear all these when you think about women working together or women being in the same business or the same arena. People always try to put it in that light where it's competitive and it's ugly. And Karen is just not like that. I haven't really encountered that as of yet, I'll say, in general. But Karen is really one of those people who has gone the extra mile. And that's what was just
Agreed.
So dope to me because I was new at this. So I didn't know what to expect. Neither of us knew what to expect. And she's a big fucking deal.
She's a huge fucking deal. And we're so excited to have her.
You're right. There isn't a lot of like backstabbing sort of competitiveness in the podcast circle because it's, you know, kind of small. Everyone does it as a labor of love more than a, you know, true business.
Right.
But in addition, Karen Rod go above and beyond.
Yeah, they're so supportive. They're so fantastic. So here's a really good question. So Drew has this really awesome T-shirt he wears sometimes. It says, I heart black people on it. Okay. So he wears it sometimes if, like, my family's over. It's hilarious.
I've had it for over a decade.
He's had it forever.
And, in fact, I bought it for a party at your mom's place where there was, like, a reunion. It was something. And there was, like, you know, it would be, like, 40 family members. They all know me, right? It's not like a surprise. Like I rolled up, like no one thought it was being like ironic or hipster or doofus. And family loved it. Like, oh, dude, this was awesome. Everyone's taking a picture with me in it. And I would say generally when I'm out and about in public, I get really good responses from, I would say 99% of people around. In fact, everyone except for this first individual that gave me a cause to pause.
So, yeah, so somebody, he posted a picture of, we went to an action here in Philadelphia for a Fight for 15, and Drew was wearing that shirt. I think I had just like a Philadelphia shirt on or something. I don't even think you can see my shirt in the picture, but in his pic, in the picture he posted as his Avi on Twitter, you could see that his shirt said, I love black people. And somebody. I heart black people.
Heart symbol.
Right. I heart simple.
Just like a heart emoji.
A yellow heart. And somebody hit him up on Twitter and was like, I'm offended by that, and that it's fetishizing of black people. And I was like, "What? What do you think, Mel? I mean, is there a room for it to be offensive? I mean,
I think people. I'm hesitant to tell people what should offend them.
Me too.
But I think sometimes we're in a hurry to be offended because they don't know you,
right?
And that's one of the things. And I do, like, I'm one of the people who I don't turn away allies. And I don't do it, and I don't mean that in a way of kissing ass, because if I was like, okay, that's some bullshit, I would have no problem with saying that. But I feel like there are people who are very well-intentioned, and that matters. That matters. And when you look at the work that you've done, and, like, all of that goes into it, and if you just decide, oh, you're wearing a T-shirt that says, I love black people, that's a fetish. No, we really live in a time where that needs to be expressed.
Well,
so I wouldn't be offended by that.
And I agree with you. And that's why I wear it, right? I feel like it's a, you know, a version of, you know, Black Lives Matter to me. And and it's very real. I have, you know, my wife, large parts of my family, my goddaughter, my mom. You know, there's a lot of black people in my family that I really love. And for me, the sentiment's never ironic or, you know, whatever.
Right.
But so the issue I have is that on Twitter, the platform I have is generally, you know, white guy talking about privilege, typically other white people. And I'm very firm in sort of my approach to things. And it's not the intent that matters, but the outcome. And if the outcome is that this individual thinks it's fetishizing, he's offended, I can't deny him that. You know, that's how he feels. That's how he feels. Even if it's kind of bullshit, who is it? I don't know. It's some dude on Twitter or whatever. But it's hard for me to, you know, say to people like, hey, when Levi and Petty or whatever the racist dudes that chanted the hang an N-word from a tree at the SAE house in Oklahoma University, they came out with like, I'm not a racist. I'm really, my intent wasn't to hurt anybody. I have a good heart. And I was like, fuck that. The outcome is you offended a whole lot of people.
Yeah, but you were just wearing a shirt that I love black people.
I hear you, but I offended somebody. It's hard for me to.
Yeah, but it also was one of these fucking hotep idiots, too. You know, so you got to take things with a grain of salt sometimes. Sometimes you got to be like, consider the source.
Well, and here's the thing. The timing of it was curious in as much as I had tweeted a couple of statements, almost rants, like, you can't be in alignment with Black Lives Matter and be an Islamophobe. You can't be in alignment with Black Lives Matter and be a homophobe. It just doesn't work that way. You can't choose the, you know, whatever. And dude writes back, yes, I can. I was like, wait a minute. Let me just clarify. Are you saying that you're a homophobe? And he writes back, yes, I am. And I was like, okay, bye. And I, you know, unfollowed him. I was like, whatever, you know, blah, 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 blah. And he had me in my picture and screen capped it and said, you know, only on Twitter is this white motherfucker going to tell me how to, you know, care for black lives or something like that. And then the next day, who's this dude? Was this dude? It's fetishizing. So I don't know. Maybe. Yeah. Who knows?
It's really one of those things that happens. And you do have to consider the source. you do have to consider the source. Like I said, I'm with you in as much as I don't, I'm not going to tell somebody what should offend them, because it's not like we're all different. We're all made differently.
Right.
So I'm not going to say you shouldn't be offended by this, but at the same time, I'm going to take that offense with a grain of salt as well. I say offensive shit all the time, regularly. And people are allowed to be offended. You are allowed to be offended by that. And maybe my intent wasn't to offend. Maybe my intent was. But when my intent isn't to offend, and I know that, I'm secure enough. And, you know, there's a point where you've got to be secure enough in what you're doing and who you are to kind of, to a certain extent, let it roll off your back. Or also do a mental checklist. Is what I'm doing worth it? Because there have been offensive things that I've said where I'm like, okay, it's not that big a deal. Is this the hill I want to die on? Blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And if the answer is no, it's like, okay, I'll let it go. But when it's something benign, it's really one of those things where it's your call, but I don't see it as fetishizing. I think it is. We do live in a time where Black love needs to be expressed not only among Black people, but globally. Mm-hmm. Not saying that we need to be validated outward, because we should have that self-love in our communities, but I think it is, it does need to be heard from other people, because it's a human issue. Mm-hmm. When we start looking at these Black issues that we're dealing with, it's not just the Black community. It's a human issue. This goes out. This, the unrest, the discord, that ripples throughout the world. So it's, being Black, we're part of the human race. We need to be loved. And that needs, we're at a time where it definitely needs to be expressed, often and loudly. So
no, I say good, the damn a ding for that. I'm not going to stop, but there's a little bit, I can't lie, that chink in the armor, the joy's been diminished a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's going to happen. And I think when we look at, when you, and I'm not a white man, so I've never been in that position. So when you do have to look at something from a position of privilege, I can see why you would look at it look at yourself a little more critically. I understand that too.
Yeah, and I but just simply, I'm pretty vociferous on Twitter about those sort of things. And it would be, mm-hmm. I just wouldn't allow myself to be hypocritical in that regard. In fact, he tweeted like, who is this? What is this? And someone that knows me, tagged me and said, I said, hey, that's me and my wife. And I think we were at the March to Justice in Baltimore or 515, whatever. And he said, you don't think this is fetishizing? I was like, no, I don't think it is at all. And his response was something about, I've only seen white people at rap concerts wear it. Do you see where I could be concerned? And I wrote back. And
that's some concern trolling if I ever heard it. He doesn't even know you. He doesn't follow you. Who does? Just the whole thing was just completely, in my opinion, was just a bait situation. And when people are coming at you in that way, it's like, that's not somebody who cares even really in reality if you're wearing a shirt or not. Like, they just wanted to get their tweet off.
Yeah, some people you have to decide. Some people you have to decide if it's because, they've got a legitimate concern, or if it's because of who you are or how you look, and weigh that with a grain of salt. And I mean, if he's only seen people wear it at rap concerts, that's his problem. Who the fuck is he? Is he the Census Bureau? Get the fuck out of here.
I've on more than one occasion had it on and forgot and just gone somewhere. And one time, I don't say it worked out badly, but I went to like a salad. Was it
Salad Works?
And there was a bunch of people working. One Black woman, the only Black person in the whole store. I walk in with the I Heart Black People t-shirt, and she's like, "I got this. I'm gonna make this motherfucker's salad right here. We about to do this." And no, they make the salad right in front of you. And shit. It was funny. I felt kind of weird. I was
she
like,
had
"Oh
an
shit!"
Interest. She was like, "Oh, you love Black people, huh? All right, dude.
We'll see how much you love me."
Yeah, we'll see.
The other time I was on the interstate, and I went to like the restroom or whatever, get gas, and I'm getting a Starbucks, and forgot, didn't think anything of it. I just wear to have it on, and guy's like, "Love the shirt, man!" And I was like, "Huh? Oh, I love you too."
You should have worn that shirt to Starbucks when they had that.
Oh, the race shit,
that would have been funny. I should have.
Perfect.
Yes, they canceled it though, didn't they?
They did.
So, yeah, figures.
Figures. I got dinged for that. Present in
So you said the podcast has been going on since last July. So you're coming up on a year. That's pretty
well
exciting.
Done.
Awesome. How did you get started, and how did you and Siege meet? Like, what was what's
So we, I got bit by the podcasting bug guesting on our producer, Classic Materia, Jamal's podcast. He used to do this thing called the Classic Team Up. So it would be, well, he started out the Cold Slither podcast kind of disbanded. So he started doing his own thing under the same, under the network. And so he had me on in our show. The episode with me ran on for like 3 hours. Like it had to be a two-parter. Uh-huh. And I was hooked. So I was guesting on different shows and he was like, you should think about doing this. And I was like, I think I should do this. And a lot of people were like, you need a podcast. You should try it. But I did not want to do it by myself because as alluring and witty as I am, me talking to myself for an hour just did not seem like the move, or just, you know, it just seemed like preaching and I didn't want to do that. I wanted like banter.
Yeah.
And so Siege and I just started interacting on Twitter, and I can't remember if maybe she was the one who suggested it. It just came up and we're like, we're gonna do this. And at the time my son got sick, and so I was in the hospital. I was basically living in the hospital with him. And my life was kind of in upheaval. My job situation became tenuous. My living situation became tenuous. So starting a podcast wasn't very high on the list of priorities. So we move into 2014. She's like, we're going to do this. And we were going to branch out. We were just going to go out on our own. Well, Jamal started a new podcast because we both loved 24. And when 24 Live Another Day came back, I started guesting. I'm like, I'm just going to be on this bitch every motherfucking week. I literally invited myself once this podcast.
Nice.
And right as it was wrapping up in the summer, I was like, you know, I'm about to start my own. I'm about to start my own podcast, you know, blah, blah, blah. He's like, well, I have space on my server. I already know, you know, what to do, because we didn't have any idea what we're going to do as far as production.
Right.
We had set up an iTunes
channel and all that.
Any of that. And so he had all that in place. So I'm like, so CJ, what do you think? And she was like, if we just basically have to
show up and talk.
Give content, yeah. We can do that.
Boom.
And so it started, and our first show did really well. Like, we're still, our audience is really swelling. Like, you get that initially, because I have a fairly decent following on Twitter. So we had that big boom for our first few episodes. And of course, you know, that kind of levels off a little bit. But now we're back. We're seeing growth again. We never really hit a serious dip, but our listeners are growing. Our fan base is really growing. The people who follow me on Twitter, because there are people who follow me on Twitter, they're like, wait, you have a podcast? I didn't know. So it's there are not only people who follow me on Twitter, but also people I've never heard of. So, right. And so we're at that part.
That's great. Congratulations. That's well deserved.
So
it's,
cool.
It's so fun. It's fun to do. It's work.
Yes, it is.
You know what, though? What you just said, every podcast I enjoy, and if I know them and I speak to that podcaster, has almost verbatim, if not some form of that same, you know, it's so fun. We love it. We enjoy it. Like, if you don't enjoy it, love it, it's just not a good podcast to listen to.
No, that's
yeah.
true.
Yeah. That's true. And I think the thing is, we didn't I think sometimes when you get a niche and you're like a political podcast, or you want to be funny, or you want to be this, I think there's a lot of pressure. And we just really approached it from, this is who we are. These are the things we want to talk about. And we're pretty witty and smart and fun. So you just listen to us. And that's worked. It's worked really well.
It's a good formula.
I love the show. It's so funny. I cannot wait till a new one comes on. And
they're terrible people. Like, I
love it. The smut, I'm here for.
Yeah,
I love it.
Like, I'm also at that point where, you know, when I start, like, we're pushing it a little more, and it's kind of starting to make it to my Facebook feed, and I'm like, my daddy gonna hear this show one day.
I will say, of all the podcasts I listen to, yours is probably the dirtiest.
We're dirty. We are so it's dirty. Definitely, and that's sad. No,
I
know, it's fantastic.
I'm here for that. I love it.
Well, on our network, we've got like Sarone Russell and Gordon Baker Bone, and they are blue. But I think we're a little, like, when it comes down to filth pound for pound, I think we're the filthiest. Like, yeah. We're dirty.
I love it.
Yeah, but y'all are...
And we could be talking about anything.
Right, and it'll just swing its way right over to that.
Thumb in the butt time.
Yeah. Yes.
Exactly right.
Thumb in the butt. That guy's cracking
up. Never know
up.
When you need it.
The way y'all do it, though, it's not... You know, like, you can be blue for blue's sake. You can be like, oh, I'm trying to do a bit that's like, you know, or I have a thing that I do every week that's got blue material. It's not like that. It's just sort of, it comes off as like, this is just how y'all are. And like, if you weren't recording it, you'd be fucking cussing and talking about thumbs and butts and Benoit balls anyway.
If you were on my sofa and we were sitting down drinking wine, that is exactly how the conversation would go.
That's awesome.
That's, so what you're hearing is two friends just talking and tripping out and
love it.
Yeah, it's fun. That's what makes it fun. I think that's what makes it fun to listen to.
Mm-hmm. And you do. You feel like flying the wall, but you're also, you know.
Yeah. And what I love about it, because sometimes one of the hard things about doing something like this is you get a lot of strangers, but your friends won't always support it because they don't see you. They just see you as you. They don't see you as, you know. A media person. They just see you as you. So the fact that my friends listen to my show, like, if don't anybody stop listening to the show, but what I'm saying is nobody else listened to it and my friends listened to it and enjoyed it, that would mean a lot to me, because those are the people who know me. So those are the people who could look at me and say, this bitch is nothing like this, and I don't want to fucking listen to her be fake.
Interesting.
Right.
When my friends listened to it and they were like, you are so ridiculous, I almost said shut up, because I could imagine you sitting in my house saying that.
Yeah, that's a good litmus. That's a really good litmus.
Yeah,
that's the thing.
I think that I love the most, when the people who really know you can look at what you're doing and support you and see it, but this is dope what you're doing and you're doing it as yourself. That's what I love.
We have a couple. Carl, he's been, we call him the original Johnner. He's listened to every episode, and he's flying out for episode 50.
Yeah, he's going
to
be on the show.
We're going to go get steaks and shit. Yeah, it's going to be fun. He's like that. He's a friend and he's known us forever. But you're right. We have a review we're going to read later from Finland. Fucking Finland. Who listened to our show from Finland?
Somebody did. So, not to turn on a dime, but
keep it dirty.
Let's do it.
On last week's show, you had to switch recording apparatus, and your boobs came into play.
Tickle bitties.
And, you know, I was with you. I was like, I know this problem. I know exactly what the issue is, and I know that it's like, you know, there's certain situations where you can keep them under wraps, and it's like, sometimes it's like, nope, they're here. Yeah.
And a webcam is just like wide angle, like straight up. It's not a flattering anything. Webcams are just...
And Siege, of course, you know, she couldn't let it go, though.
No. Okay, no. That was reverse. That was Siege.
Oh, that was Siege. Oh, I thought it was you for some reason.
Mm-mm, that was Siege.
And you wouldn't let it go.
And I wouldn't let it go because she had on, I don't know if you saw the video, but she had on a shirt that said Inglewood, and it was mad hella extra O's. Inglewood. I thought you were talking about when I was on the Black Guy Who Tips last week, because I was on the Black Guy Who Tips, and Justin was on, and I was giving Justin fever because I was trying to get myself together.
He is a fool.
Justin is a mess.
He is the king of bad advice. Just do the opposite of whatever Justin says on any of this.
He's a mess. I love him.
He's a mess. God bless him. He'll never listen to anybody's podcast or reply to you on Twitter, but God bless him.
I get a reply from him occasionally on Twitter.
Like once a month.
He replies to me.
Ooh. You fancy then.
He replies to me. I was surprised because I heard that wasn't a thing that he does.
It isn't. I'm just telling from personal experience. But although he did used to reply to me, and then when he asked me if I was married, and I was like, Drew was like, yes, she is.
Yeah, I got a little tight. In fact, he replied to that. I tweeted him there like, hey, side-eye, bro. Come on. No dirty fucking macking in this. This bitch.
Well, then I was there with Siege and totally empathized about the boob situation. Because I used to have enormous breasts, and I actually had a breast reduction surgery.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because
for real,
it was
y'all?
Really out of control.
And I'm not trying to be like crude, just objective. They removed 10 pounds of breast flesh. 10 pounds of breast. That's, okay, just imagine a 10-pound weight on your back.
And just tell me none of my business is if it, what was your cup size?
Oh my God.
It was
F
like
something?
No,
double
it was
F?
Like a Jay or something like
that. It was crazy. It was crazy.
Yeah, it was really out of control.
And here's the thing. You know, we're older now. Our bodies have changed in shape and stuff. But there was a period of time where you were, you know, save your breasts, you know, pretty darn thin.
Yeah.
You know, like you'd be like on the bottom, like a size like 8, right? And on the top, like nothing would fit. Yeah. There was like one time, oh my God, it broke my fucking heart. We were going to try on bathing suits and, you know, we weren't married and you were going in by yourself. I wasn't going into like the dressing room and like helping you get into said bathing suit or anything. And you were in for like 20 minutes. And you just came out in tears.
I was like, forget this.
I don't even want to talk about it. Just in tears. I don't want
to talk about it. Let's go. No, it was really horrible. And something had to be done. And it's just a whole, it runs in my family. All of my sisters, like, save one, have had breast reduction surgery. It just doesn't work. You can't.
And it wasn't healthy on your frame. It was bad for your back.
My back was terrible.
Your mom has not had a reduction surgery.
And she should.
And she's not nearly as buxom as you are.
No.
And when I see her sit on the couch, she has to like support herself. It's like, it doesn't look comfortable. Like, you know, and she's not going to have surgery now. She's 70, for crying out loud. But
yeah.
Well, don't be shouting out my mom's age on the show and stuff.
Stop. Mm-hmm. She didn't even listen. She don't listen. It don't matter.
You don't know what she listens to? She's sneaky.
I said 70. She'll be 70 in 17 years.
Oh, that's a good
she's
one.
She's not even that young.
Mm-hmm. But boobs, yeah, boobs are definitely a high topic. And they're just because you have to deal with them, and guys get obsessed with them, and girls get obsessed with them, and...
Oh, well, that was, like, I had to, that was one of the things, like, when I, that's how I'll admit it, that's literally how I got a bunch of Twitter followers early on, because I've been on Twitter for a while, and I, you know, I knew some people or whatever, so I had, like, a couple of hundred, you know, followers or whatever. I put up an Abby of me in a tank top, and boom, 2,000 followers.
Bam. Just like that.
Like it was, I was like, okay, you've got, cause I had to I actually turned off my notifications. Cause it was, you know, jeez. I mean, it wasn't a whole lot for somebody who's like famous, but for my regular ass.
You were like, wait a second, like, what's going on here?
Like, what is going on, girl? It's the titties.
The Twitter be thirsty.
Twitter thirst is real.
So it was kind of, you know, so everybody's like, I just want to hug you. I just want to lay on them. I just want to rub them like the Apollo log. Like, it's just...
Not the Apollo log.
Yeah, is that for, like, before the performance? Before I go down on you, girl, let me rub the log. Get all I can.
But it wouldn't even... And the funny thing, like, it wouldn't even necessarily just be guys or girls. It would be, like, straight girls. Like, everybody loves a big titty girl.
You know, and even, I don't know if CJ had this issue or, you know, Leslie, I think you... talked about this with me personally, they were large enough that it was like almost like a, I don't call it a deformity because that's cruel, but it was like the first, every time you meet anybody, male, female, child or adult, it's like, you know,
the first thing they look at,
boobs. Like, and honestly, it would be also
like
honestly,
the first thing someone would mention. Like, if I had to describe myself, I feel like it would be the first thing somebody would say too.
She's got really big boobs.
Well, you know, she's got really big boobs, and then they would have whatever else came after it. Like, honest to goodness,
and
like,
back to the start to with the 10 pounds. The surgeon, a plastic surgeon who's known, he had a brother, and his brother did enhancements, and he did reductions. That's all the two of them did.
No, he did all the boobs, but his brother did all the butts. Noses or something. Okay. I don't know.
But all he did was reductions. I don't think he did enhancements. But anyway, he said, well, take your shirt off. Let's see him. And he goes, oh, those are massive. Pendulous.
Holy shit. He said, those are massive. They're pendulous. I was like, did you just
call my boobs pendulous?
Boobs pendulous up in here?
And he said,
I'm standing here.
And he goes, I'll take off as much as I can. I think you'll be very satisfied and blah, 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 blah. He goes, but if it were any bigger,
if it was a pound bigger,
we'd have to do a breast amputation.
Yeah.
That was the procedure they were talking about. I was like, whoa. What? Jesus. Yeah.
Holy shit. Because you're like, you're, and I mean, you can tell you've got like, I've got like a lot of boobs, but I'm also like, I've always been like broad shouldered and like, I'm a big Southern country girl. So even when I was thin, I was still like solid.
Stacked.
So yeah. So I have big boobs, but I've got a frame to support all that I have going on. But yeah. My sister is kind of like that. She's really petite, and she's like got like G cup boobs or something like that.
Mm.
Yeah.
She should look into it.
Yeah. It's got one of the highest patient satisfactions of any surgery around.
And she's in your area, too, because she lives in Lansdale.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That is in our area. No, yeah, for sure. It's definitely all of my sisters that have had the surgery have been very happy with the outcome, as have I. So I'll say that. Yeah. So on your show, you do this really cool thing called Random Questions. Mm-hmm. So we thought we'd ask you some random questions.
Oh, great. Yes, I love answering questions.
All right. Awesome.
You going first, Leslie?
No, you go first.
All right. Would you give a homeless person CPR? Like a real homeless person, like mouth to mouth?
Yeah, you're talking about like teeth are all gnarly and... Mm,
yeah.
And there's an odor issue.
I would. I won't lie and say I wouldn't be like, anybody else, but I would do it.
Anybody else would do it?
I would have to. I would want somebody, like if my family was... If I had a family member who was like homeless and kind of, you know...
Yeah, you did have to think about that. That's
not
true.
Not clean. I would still want somebody to help them, so... Yeah, I would be so freaked out, but I'm one of those roll up your sleeves type people with stuff like that.
I dig it. So. See, I would and Leslie wouldn't.
I would.
I can't even share a straw with you.
I know, that's why I said so, you wouldn't. I didn't even question. I would, you wouldn't.
That's difficult for me. But I have a first aid kit and it has one of those, you know,
mouth things.
So okay. Then I could do it then. I could see myself doing it. Okay. What
I would probably carry, like I would probably, because I let my CPR certification lapse, but I think like out of a, because I used to have one of the little mouth guard things, but sure. I would do it regardless.
Yeah. I mean, all you got to know is staying alive now. That's
just
Staying alive.
Which I think is the best thing ever.
It's so fucking cool. Brilliant.
It's so smart. What is your favorite flavor of Pringle?
Ooh.
Okay, so I don't really like Pringles that much, believe it or not, because I don't feel like it's a real chip. It's like air.
A fake
chip.
Like
what do you eat at the Olive Garden?
When I have to have a Pringle, I do sour cream and cheddar.
Oh, sour cream and cheddar. That's a good one. Go ahead, Drew, you're next.
What's the first podcast you ever listened to?
The first podcast I ever listened to was, oh, shit, because it wasn't Cold Slither. God damn it. I cannot remember the name of it.
Did you like it?
I did. I feel like it was one of my friends, and he only did like one or two, and didn't
continue.
Yeah.
Which happens more than you would think.
I did that.
Yeah.
I started and did like 6 or 7 episodes and was like, I can't do it anymore.
I can't remember if that was the first one, though. And there definitely would have been something. It was not the Cold Slither podcast, though. That was definitely not the first one. It was something random.
Something random.
I feel like it was a famous person's.
Oh, yeah, I can see that, too. I think the first podcast I ever listened to was This American Life. That was the first podcast I ever listened to because I heard it on NPR, and I was like, oh, it's a podcast. Oh, I can listen to it this way. Cool.
I think it was like Adam Carolla.
I can tell. Yeah, he did. He had one.
In fact, he's in there's some lawsuit. He started, I think, the blogger or the podcast. He started something, like one of the bigger, big platforms, and somehow got shut out or bought out inappropriately. I have to look it up, but there was a lawsuit
sort of something
surrounding podcasts. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like I listened to his. Like just to see what it was.
What it was.
I feel like that was like the first, and this was like when I first kind of really started using Twitter, and I was still like following all famous people before you realize that regular people are way better on Twitter than famous people.
Truth.
And so yeah, I think it was his.
But it seems like now, like random famous people will have a podcast, and I'll have no idea. Like,
yeah,
Rod tweeted the other day that Joe Budden has a podcast, and I was like, wait. Joe Budden has a podcast? It's like, yep. I was like, I guess
I'll.
It's
about him flushing babies.
I can only just, in my wildest nightmare, would I know what the hell Joe Budden would have to talk about on a podcast.
She's
got
to be a special kind of dick bag to want to listen to what Joe Budden
has to say. Yes. Apparently, he got into some sort of Twitter podcast beef with Bomani Jones. So
was he on Love and Hip Hop? What was the one he was on?
Yes, he was.
Oh, that's a shock. Joe Budden got in a fight. Well, I am kind of shocked because he's gotten a fight. He's getting in a fight with a man.
Exactly.
So that is shocking.
Usually it's a woman he's fighting
girls.
With. the truth.
He's got all that right. beard, though. I ain't gonna lie. He's
that
got,
beard?
It's
you
tight.
Mean
his beard. The beard
his,
is nice.
It's tight. It looks you know, like a
it
Sharpie.
Looks, it looks drawn in. It does. It's like it a looks Sharpie. Drawn in. If I could grow a fucking beard and trim it and have it fucking edged up like that, I would do it in a heartbeat. In a heartbeat.
The funniest thing about Joe Budden to me that I remember above anything else, above him beating up women and all that, is that Raekwon beat the shit out of him or punched the shit out of him or like one of Raekwon's flunkies. And he was shook. And that told me everything I needed to know about that silly ass little boy.
And the beard don't protect that glass ass chin.
And the beard doesn't protect that jaw.
Nope. Sure doesn't. Who is your favorite Braxton sister and why?
Tony. I don't. Okay, so I'm also a. I'm a very bad black Twitterer. I don't watch all of the shows. Like, so I don't watch the reality shows. If you notice, like, I'm never. If I'm live tweeting something, it's usually like a television show.
Right.
But so, like, as far as the like the Braxton family, whatever. Tony is still my favorite Braxton because I'm a '90s girl.
Right on.
And so I spent the entire '90s and early 2000s trying to look like her.
Who didn't? Who didn't, though?
And I still love her music. And she has, I mean, like, she's had her ups and downs, but
she's
I like
still
her
gorgeous.
Resilience.
Yeah, I love her. She's the original.
I love her resilience.
She's great.
And she's talented, and she's pretty, and she comes off as sweet, and seems like her family is a little crazy, and she still, from what I've seen, still tries to be kind of like an even force in the family. So
her mom is absolutely, I would say, crazy.
Her mom isn't that bad. It's just, you know, the thing is, I have a lot of sisters, so mm-hmm. That show, like, I completely relate to it, because when you have, do you have sisters?
I do. I have, for full-blooded sisters, I have three sisters, so it's four of us. And then my dad's ex-wife had a daughter after they were divorced, and we count her as our sister. And my stepmom has a daughter, and so I've got five sisters.
Yeah. So with sisters, like, you guys, at least in my family, like, we play our roles, mm-hmm. and they don't change, like, no matter how old you are or what the situation is. So right. That's what I always see play out on that show. Like, I'm the youngest in my family, and so I'm always like, you know, everybody's always picking on me. They're always trying to leave me out. It's always, you know, that's how I always feel. So when I hear Tamar complaining about that shit on that show, I'm like, yes, she's right. They're yeah. in on it together. Like, and then, you know, the middle sister, there's one that's always the peacemaker, and they're always uh-huh. trying to make sure everybody's okay and make sure everybody gets together. And there's the responsible one. There's the crazy one. So that's why I love the show, because I really relate to it because of my sisters, because those roles are so well defined. So I wouldn't necessarily call her family crazy, but I would say that sisterly interactions can be crazy.
Yeah. I'm the big sister.
See.
Even though my stepsister is older than I am. My stepmom's daughter is older than I am. But we didn't grow up in the same house.
Right.
She was already an adult and had a family of her own by the time, like, we knew each other growing up and we liked each other or whatever. But she was already an adult by the time our parents got married. So and I'm older, of course, than everyone else. So I'm the big sister, and I'm very, very bossy. Like, I'm the one that kind of. I'm kind of the ain't no sunshine. If I'm pissed off,
you're the Tracy. That's what you're saying. Just come out, you Tracy.
I'm the crazy, like, I'm the wild one. I'm the one that's gonna set it off. I'm the one. If we're about to go bust out windows, I might not throw the brick, but I'm gonna make sure nobody fucks with you while you're throwing bricks. Like, I'm just like too I'm funny. The protector and the one that kind of. When I'm riled up, everybody is riled up.
Yeah, that's Karen. And I will have to give a shout out to my sister Karen, whose birthday is tomorrow.
My sister Chloe, my baby sister's birthday is today. She's 30.
Oh, congratulations, happy birthday, Chloe. Yeah.
I called her today. I was like, you is kind. You is smart. You is 30. Ah,
I love it. Well, my sisters and I are turning up this Saturday night in Brooklyn. We go into a Jamaican club, and it's going to be epic. Ooh. I feel bad for everybody that's going to be in there, because it's going to be on and popping. So
booty shaking. You're going to have new cities. It's going to be wildness.
Pop, pop, pop.
Cannot wait.
Yes. All right, Drew, let's get into, let's get into this.
The news is coming on. The news is coming on.
So this My Brother's Keeper initiative that President Obama has put forth, they had a big kind of relaunch or, you know, specific launch, official launch, I guess I should say of it yesterday, I believe it was. And if you're unfamiliar, My Brother's Keeper is a 5-year, $200 million program that will give mentorships, summer programs, and other support to boys and young men of color, most of them African-American or Hispanic, and that entirely omits the challenges facing their mothers and sisters. This is from an opinion piece by Kimberly Williams Crenshaw in the New York Times today. At a meeting in Washington last week to announce new commitments to the program from corporations, school systems, and nonprofits, Mr. Obama gave a perfunctory shout out to all the heroic single moms out there, but did not utter the word girls even once. So I've been having this like internal debate with myself about this whole My Brother's Keeper thing ever since it was announced. Mm-hmm. I'm all for it. Like I know mentorship is important. I have some questions about corporate sponsorship, but whatever. And I get the, as you mentioned earlier, the intent. And I do get the fact that it will be hopefully a really good thing for the young men and boys that get to participate in the program. However, it's just a strange thing to me because, you know, there's that saying, you know, when you help a woman, you help a country. When you help a woman, you help a family. When you help a woman, you know, you help the next generation. And I just feel like there's this hole in a lot of our conversations where women are just kind of not even in the conversation at all, not under consideration. I don't know why this program had to be My Brother's Keeper. Why couldn't girls be involved? Like, I can't think of a reason in my head as I try and rationalize it why it wouldn't be something that would be beneficial to all young people of color. So it's just a thing with me. Like, I'm not trying to down the program, and I'm not trying to say I don't think that it would be beneficial, and I'm not trying to say that it's not going to be good for those that participate in it, but it just feels like we're leaving something unsaid at the same time to me.
You know what I would love to see is My Sister's Keeper. And I mean, there are things such as Black Girls Rock and stuff like that. I'm hesitant. I know that, I don't know that him focusing on young men is necessarily abandoning young women.
Right.
And I say that because I focus on women because I'm a woman. Like, I'm a woman. I know the challenges that are faced, that I face as a Black woman. So when I reach out to young Black women, I reach out to Black mothers, I reach out to, so it's, and it's not that I don't care about other, you know, about Black men, because I do, I have a Black son, and I definitely do what I, you know, do everything in my power to make sure that he has the tools that he needs. But I also, my where I go, my home base is always going to be Black women. I think what he's doing, his intention is, I was a Black man who by every indication would have been at risk. And I, you know, through whatever support I received, whether it was, you know, his grandparents and his mother and whatever mentoring. So in his way, he's paying it forward to men, to young men like him. And I'm just very hesitant to take away from that, only because I know, and I am just as frustrated to see Black women left out of so many conversations. I truly, truly am. But that doesn't mean that Black men still don't need that mentoring and don't need those special, that special attention. Because, and one of the things is, because I have a son and I have a daughter. And the way they are handled, even when I look at the school system, the way that troubled Black boys and troubled Black girls are handled very differently. Very differently. Now, there is, because there was a recent study, I believe, that said that black girls get suspended at higher rates than anyone.
Yeah.
What I noticed was my, because, and my daughter, I definitely had to deal with that more with her than with him. So that's not false. What I had to deal with my son, though, was just a constant nitpicking at his everything. Mm. So it wasn't so much that they were suspending him, because he wasn't getting suspended, but I was getting calls about him almost every day for even the most minor infractions. So if they're calling me every day, I know what he's dealing with every day. Mm. And that takes away from you. And it took away from how he felt about himself. And I'm frustrated. I'm a parent. So I'm like, why are you cutting up in school? So I'm punishing him. So he's getting it at school. He's getting punished by me because he's constantly, you know, I'm constantly getting all these calls. And that took away from him. It felt like he almost had this feeling of uselessness and like he couldn't do anything right. And that it tore at him, and it made me, I ended up actually putting him in counseling because I'm like, I have this bad kid. I don't know what's going on. And it was really just conversations that I had between, you know, him going to therapy and talking to his therapist and feeling more comfortable talking to me about certain things where I realized what was being done. So while he wasn't getting this discipline, there was just a constant tearing at his sense of self. And that needs to be addressed. And that's why I personally having a son, that's why I'm not against my brother's keeper. What I do want to see, though, I would love to see my sister's keeper as well, because there are specific needs that young black women have that need to be addressed too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not so much, to me, it's not why just my brother's keeper, but I feel like why isn't someone taking the helm on a large scale like the president could for a separate organization for black women?
Right. And I also think that the way that it is, the program itself is not where I have the problem. My problem that I've had is the positioning of it, because there is something that is political about it, and there is something that is significant in terms of the narrative that's important to note, because he is our president. So when he mm-hmm. says stuff, people pay attention. And so mm-hmm. it's important to note how it's pitched. So when he announced it, and this is why I started just kind of feeling like, oh, I don't know how I feel about it, is because he announced the initiative and he noted that boys who grew up without a father were more likely to be poor. And it's like, well, more likely than who? Because their sisters are in the same situation. Yeah. Their sisters are in the same, they have the same lack of resources in the same underfunded schools in the same neighborhood. So there's this idea that's, you know, pushed. It's like, well, you know, black women have it a little bit better, so they don't need as much. And that's where I have the problem. It's not the program that I have the problem with. I think the program will do good things. It's the political pitching of it, because it allows a foothold for people to have that idea that black women don't need as much.
Well, and I think everyone here can agree that erasure of black women in all facets is rampant and historically, pervasive. Do you, Leslie, think that this is a... You know, and erasure doesn't necessarily happen from a place of deliberate intent.
Right.
You know, it can happen inadvertently for a variety of ways. Do you feel this is, in a sense, erasure of black women?
Like I said, I don't think the existence of the program is, but I think that the language that has been used to tout it, to promote it, to...
It's male-centric, though, how could the language be otherwise?
The language could be more about the program and less about how you talk about the reasons for the need of the program. Because if you're looking at numbers, I mean, women of color earn less than both their white men and their male counterparts in every ethnic and racial group across the spectrum. The median wealth of a single black and Hispanic woman is $100 to $120 respectively, compared to $7,900 for black men, $9,730 for Hispanic men, and $41,500 for white women, excuse me. We won't even talk about the white men's situation.
No, please.
But I'm just saying, that's stark. You know, because women are, they, they're the ones bearing the brunt of actually carrying families in most cases. And it's very significant when you affect the lives of young girls, when you affect the lives of young women, what that does to help boys and men as well. So that's where my problem is. It's not the program. I think the program's great. I think it'll do wonderful things, and I'm all for getting support for young men of color. I love it. It's this way that it's being pitched. That's where the erasure part comes in.
I think when we talk about the issues that impact Black women, it's a systematic thing women are getting paid less, you know, things like that. When we start looking at things like that, where Black women are getting paid less, that's something that a Black woman has gone, you know, let's say you're a college graduate and you're still, you know, getting paid less. That's an issue that most certainly needs to be addressed. Or you're a young girl in high school and you are, you know, you're being graded differently or treated unfairly. Mm. Those are issues that need to be addressed in, I feel like, a different forum. Not saying that it's less important, because I believe it's of equal importance. I think it's different. I think the reasoning behind, the reason that My Brother's Keeper does and should exist the way it does, is because the issues that young black men face are somewhat different. The way they are lacking in leadership, there's a difference in the way our young girls are. Our girls can go to school and see someone who looks like them in front of the classroom. Our boys don't get that.
That's definitely true.
I think that's very important. And because of that, one of the things boys start losing interest right around that middle school age. There's a dip. Another thing that you look at, that I've noticed, actually, when you start looking at literature, there is a lot of literature that's targeted toward young girls. There are series after series after series targeted toward young girls, Black girls. Black boys do not have a lot of
that. I'll say this. We've talked on our show quite a lot about, you know, because I'm white, she's Black, interracial things. Mm-hmm. And on TV, in commercials, in print, in catalog, just on television shows, the list of Black women, white man, or Black woman, you know, non-Black man, interracial relationship, almost as if the network feels we want to add a dose of color and we don't think Black love is appropriate, a Black man, Black mm-hmm. woman. And a Black man and a white woman is quote-unquote taboo, mm-hmm. so we're going to go Black woman, white man. And so I will admit, you do see, you know, in some representations, Black women more, you know, more consistently, albeit in a, you know, with right. a non-Black partner. And I will say, you know, in our life, there's probably some bias in that, A, we don't have children, and we do have nieces and nephews, but of our nephews, they're all like, the youngest is maybe like 28. Mm-hmm. they're 30. They're like our age. Yeah. And our nieces, we've got 8 little girls under the age of 13. They call me Uncle Drew, you know.
But I also think that there's a little bit of a media twist of this, because I don't think our young girls are as good, are as well off as we like to believe that they are.
Oh, no.
You know, they are more likely to be victims of domestic violence and sex trafficking. They're more likely to be involved in child welfare and juvenile
justice systems. We weren't doubting that.
No, but I'm just saying that there are, you know, Black women and Black girls, people like to say they're okay. That's part of the burden we have as Black women, is there's this, we can take it. We are strong. We are able to handle it. And I think that's why I have a problem. That's exactly that whole mentality is what I see playing out here. It's like, well, our boys really need our support. The girls can handle it for now. Like that's the way they're pitching it. And again, it's not the program I have a problem with, but anytime that narrative is pushed, I push back on it, because our girls need support. And they, mm-hmm. you know, when you see a boy who got a girl pregnant, it's like, oh, he didn't have enough support. And you see a girl that's pregnant, oh, she's fast. That's the way society treats the two people involved in the situation. And you know, that's why I feel like it would be good to see both, you know, some support as well. Or it just pitched us like, you know what, this is going to do this thing. And we know that this other thing also needs to be addressed, not just like, you know, the boys have it bad. That's where I feel like it's
one
like,
of the, one of the things. But, well, one of the other things I think where I do see, because I absolutely, you know, and I hope I'm not giving the impression that I feel like women need to sit on the side for this and wait their turn, because I do not. I feel like there definitely needs to be, just like there's a my brother's keeper, there needs to be a my sister's keeper. There should be one.
Right.
I feel like the way those would be approached, the way mentoring with young men would be approached, would be different for mentoring than mentoring for young women. I also feel that there needs to be something also similar for the LGBT teen community.
Definitely.
Because that's an underserved community. So it's, I think what I want to see is that program in other iterations of it. Right. I don't want to just see
right.
that.
And I just don't think that it like, just from my perspective, you're the president. You have all this, whatever you have at your disposal, you had at your disposal. This is what you chose to do. It could have been a lot of things.
Yeah, I won't.
It could have been.
The reason I won't take that from him necessarily is because if I were president, I can guarantee you I would have a my sister's keeper and probably would have everything, because that would be the thing that's nearest to my heart.
Yeah, I get that. I do get that, but. Yeah, well,
that definitely be the thing.
That you
and I mean,
because
you look at it, he has. I mean, he has two daughters. He doesn't yep. even have a son,
right?
So, I'm somebody like I have a son, but I definitely know if I were president, and I were to throw my all into something, I would throw it into the thing that was nearest and dearest to me. And if I was somebody who pulled my, you know, who made something out of nothing, I would reach out to the girls who look like me to help them pull something out of nothing,
yeah.
so that you know it's not. When he was elected, I was very excited, and me and my daughter talked about it. But when he was elected, I talked to my son. That was the first thing I did. I said, "You see this man? His father didn't, because I'm a single parent, and I don't get very much support. I don't talk about that very often. Well, I talk about it to a certain extent, but I don't get very much support. And so I talked to him, and I said, he had a single parent. He had a single mom. You know, life was not very easy for him.
Right.
His grandparents helped him, just like your grandparents helped me with you. He was able to go to, you know, the best colleges. This is what he was able to do. And you need to look at him, because that is somebody who looks like you, and this is what he can do. So I understand that. I think there needs to be something for young girls. There's, it's not to say that there should not be, but there needs to be. But I understand why he did what he did.
And it might even,
because when I look at him, I look to my son first, and I look at him, I say, that's what you can do.
Right. And it might even be, you know, sociologically pragmatic, right? There, you know, might be, well, you know, black men constitute a larger percentage of incarceration, so forth and so on. You know, and Leslie, I think you might say, okay, but the framing of it is the issue. So I hear you. And you know, women are if men are the most incarcerated, women are the fastest growing, or black men are the fastest growing population. But this has been heavy. Can I change the topic?
Yeah, sure.
We were talking about Joe Budden before. You think he's got shit in his beard?
He might.
Looks like he drew it on with poop. I don't know. Let's listen.
This story,
oh my gosh,
at the very least,
they're loaded,
may give you a new appreciation for a clean-shaven face.
These are the things that cause urinary tract infection.
Oh my God.
A handful of brave men allowed us to swab their beards.
Oh. Lean on in
to see what...
These are some big-ass, hairy, gross freeway beards, though.
Here we go.
What we found even blew the mind of this microbiologist.
I'm usually not that surprised. I was surprised by this.
All of the beards had a lot of bacteria, but the normal stuff you'd find on most surfaces. Beards proving they trap and hold quite a bit. But some were comparable, too.
Oh, no.
Those are the types of things that you'd find in
poop?
Uh-huh.
Action 7 News has swabbed a lot of things over the years. This is uncharted territory.
I've never seen a petri dish with these colors before, and I've been doing a few.
They're lovely, aren't they? It's because we've never had them until now.
What are they?
These are enterics. These are the kind of things that you find in feces.
Oh, no.
This is a collection of dirty. Globic says this bacteria won't make you sick.
But it certainly shows a degree of uncleanliness that would be somewhat disturbing. Is just completely loaded with enterics.
Globic recommends a thorough beard scrubbing, lots of hand washing, and...
try to keep your hands away from your face
as
much as possible.
Some sound advice, especially as the beard revolution seems to be at its peak. Globic tells us if the city was to find samples like this in the water system, they'd shut it down for disinfecting.
Oh, no.
Ew.
Wow. Ew. You better wash your ass and your beards,
listen,
people.
Listen, I scrub. I have like a I have a heavy duty facial scrub. I don't take facial scrubs lightly. And at night, I wash my face in addition. Before I go to bed, I wash my hands almost like to the point of like
you don't have
raw.
To defend your beard.
I don't. I'm not saying. Listen, have I ever given you a shitty urinary tract infection?
Not to my knowledge. Your beard is not causing.
And maybe
issues.
It's the ladies. Maybe these men are going down on some dirty veg.
I was thinking a couple of things. I was thinking, one, some of these motherfuckers, like, we've all talked about the people that we go to work with who don't wash their hands. Like, we're in the bathroom and we're like, you're not gonna.
I'm in here. You're not even going to pretend.
You don't care that I see that you're a filthy motherfucker.
Kevin, you disgust me.
It's like, it's so nasty. So there's that. There's also, you know, I think maybe some of us are going down on some ladies that aren't so clean, and maybe, you know, we're just walking around with the
weren't you
the
guys
savor
after your finger in the butt. You're talking about eating the butt and riboflavin and niacin in butt?
Yeah. So maybe they're motorboating the butt. They're motorboating the butt and they're not washing their faces.
They're getting riboflavin and enterics.
They get all the riboflavin and niacin.
And poop.
And the poop.
and the poop.
Yeah.
So,
no,
I mean, I don't think that I don't think that it's surprising since analingus is so allegedly popular these days.
Oh, is it? It's on the rise?
It's on the rise.
Shit. Birthday's coming up. I'm just saying. I'm just.
Oh.
The fact that I said that and then you said shit is hilarious.
Snap.
Yeah. So I think that, yeah. But people are gross. Like, people don't wash their hands. And this isn't the first time we found poop in places that it just really shouldn't be. Like, poop is.
Like, people's it's purses. Everywhere. Isn't it always on everyone's
it's
pocketbook? Everywhere. Like, that's where they find it.
On everybody's pocketbook. Yeah. So, apparently, what I did not know until relatively recently is that, like, when you flush the toilet, it's like a plume of poop particles.
Oh, yeah.
That kind of go up in the air. And it's been said that it can go as high as 6 feet.
What?
No!
Gross.
See, that could get in your beer just from that.
So like, we live in a very, like, we think that we're this sanitary environment, but we're gross. Like, we're just nasty. There's poop everywhere.
I just honestly the vision of a poop plume that you actually said poop plume, a 6 foot high poop plume. In fact, you should write that down, Leslie. That's the episode name. 6 foot high, 6 foot high poop plume. But
it's like a plume of poop.
Well, we
do all this. We do all this cleaning, and we should. I'm not saying that we shouldn't, but we're still like, the shit has to go somewhere.
Well,
like,
the other thing,
it doesn't go to another dimension. Like, it's still on Earth with us.
You're talking about
everywhere.
Not washing your hands. The lab coat dude,
guy,
he's like, you know, don't touch your face. People touch their face like 40 times a minute. I swear
and
to God.
And people with beards, all they do is touch their beards.
I'm doing it right now.
They thinking, they rubbing their beards. It's a bunch of beard touching going on.
Hey,
but I think fellas, get some, and I know, guys, you like to do the oils and all that, but you need to clean that motherfucker.
Clean it.
No, I keep it short,
rub
too.
It down
I cut it.
But shampoo it. And that's another thing. Like, if you've got, like, a shitty beard day and you brush it, and then you've got, like, poop on your brush.
Nah,
even if you clean
nah.
your beard, you're, like, re-pooping it.
Good.
I can't do that. In fact, like, the clippers I use has, like, 12 or 14 settings. If it's like longer than like 3 or 4, I'm cutting it. I don't
you
like that.
You said brush, and it reminds me of that guy you had on your last episodes where he was talking brushing the bridge.
So great.
Where did you find him? What is his podcast? He was so funny.
My partner B, MYPOTNAB. And this is the first time that I've had a guest that I didn't really know. Like CJ follows him and they're cool. And so he was great.
Oh my God, he was so funny.
His delivery was comic.
Really sweet. He's so funny. He's a very nice guy.
He starts with the Hennessy right off the bat. Can you hear the cubes jingling? Yeah. That's the Hennessy.
So good. So.
And he's a total sweetheart. I've had so many guests and they're like family, so I don't want to be like, oh, that's my favorite guest. But he's definitely one of my new favorite people. He was really fun.
In fact, just like your first podcast, you had to make it into a two-parter. You went long because it was too fun. And you can tell.
You have good people.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we had like our first half was like really silly and lighthearted. And then like our second half, we talked a lot more about like the cops and all that good stuff. So it got a little heavier, a little more serious. And it was still like two great shows. But you should definitely listen to his podcast. He's a nice guy and he's really entertaining. So.
Now I feel like I got to stretch it out. Add something else into the fucking make it go longer. we feel like it was
we'll keep it going.
Now feels more like it was a really good guest. But yeah. It was like 3 hours. It was unbelievable.
speaking of shitty people, Ben Carson announced that he was running for president this week.
He joined the clown car.
He joined the GOP clown car and decided to run. Only he had the most bizarre announcement to his campaign launch / concert.
Concert? He live streamed it, I think.
Yeah. Let's they're gonna go through a few points here. I'm gonna play some audio and then we'll go through what the Washington Post called the 9 best moments from Ben Carson's bizarre and glorious campaign launch.
R. Kelly, but don't fuck with Remix or Ignition.
You better lose yourself in the music, the moment you own it. You better never let it go. Da 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 da. You only get one shot.
We do everything together. She even learned how to play pool because she knew I was a good.
Okay, this is him talking with his wife.
A pool player, and she actually wins sometimes, but most of the times I beat her. But I should be careful.
You know, I let him. Yeah.
Oh my God, so
I should
awkward.
Be careful because there's some media in here, and their headline will be Carson admits he beats his wife. And I'm fond of saying if my mother were Secretary of Treasury, we would not be in a deficit situation. I have no desire to get rid of safety nets for people who need them. I have a strong desire to get rid of programs that create dependency in able-bodied people. We Americans, we take care of each other. That's why we're called the United States of America. And what we have done is we've allowed the purveyors of division to become rampant in our society. I'm not politically correct. And I'm probably never...
That gets a cheer from the crowd that he has assembled. Everybody.
I'm not politically correct. I'm a total dickbag.
I'm probably never going to be politically correct. Because I'm not a politician. You see, I believe that
But you're running for president.
He's not a politician, though.
Just being clear on how...
He's a neurosurgeon.
Truly stupid that sounds. Okay.
Real issue here is that people are losing hope. And they don't feel that life is going to be good for them no matter what happens. So when an opportunity comes to... loot, to riot, to get mine. But I know where we could get a really big stimulus. There's $2 trillion of offshore money because they won't bring it back because it'll be taxed at 35%. What if we give them a tax holiday and let them bring it back and repatriate that money?
So just to be clear, let's give a 35% tax break to the richest fucking 1/10 of 1%
for trillions of dollars. Crazy! Oh my gosh, this is what he—that's how he launches his campaign. Oh my god!
That is like, and the principle with which he's assuming is Reaganomics. It's trickle down economics. It's fucking trickle down economics.
We tried that shit. It bankrupted the whole country.
Doesn't it sound like this whole thing sounds like a bad vaudeville joke? Okay, so Eminem, a church choir, a neurosurgeon, and a guy who wants to be president all walk into a bar.
Yeah. Oh my god.
He's like the uncle that you never want to see coming because you know he's going to talk about a bunch of shit you don't want to talk about.
Definitely. All right, here, let the highlights finish.
And there are people who said, but you can't do this. You don't have any experience. Well, let me tell you something. I don't have a lot of experience busting budgets and doing the kinds of things that have gotten us into all the trouble that we're in now. But I do have a lot of experience in solving problems, complex surgical problems that have never been done by anybody before. I can name a lot of people in politics who've been there all their lives, and you probably wouldn't want them to polish your shoe. We are one nation.
Shade.
You said polish your shoe.
God. Indivisible. Oh with gosh. Liberty and justice for all. God bless you, and God bless the United States of America.
That was the end. I just want to say that.
Okay. All right, seriously, guys. I mean, really, the fuck, dude, the fuck.
Yes, an all-male choir returned to perform the Battle Hymn of the Republic as Carson and his wife sang along with an American flag descended from above.
Apparently, she played the violin.
She played the violin during the national anthem.
It's like when Don Draper's batshit crazy wife played Zubies. Like,
oh yeah, Zubie Zubie Zoo.
Who put this together? Don King? Was this like a fucking? Is this a Golden Boy promotion?
It was a money. It was a May money team money team money Mayweather production.
Who put this? It was a hot ass
hot mess.
Hot mess. You know, you didn't play the whole course,
says,
Leslie.
I'm not politically correct. I hate that. That's a thing that people want to be proud of. Because whenever I hear you say, "I'm not politically correct," I really don't like thinking before I speak, and you want to make me do this, and I resent it. Like, what does it take to take 2 seconds to think about what the fuck flies out of your stupid ass?
Yeah, it's a step down from "I'm not a racist, but."
Right.
I'm not a racist, but here comes some really racist shit.
However, I'm going to say the most offensive shit in a minute.
Can I try and play the whole chorus since they didn't play it?
You can play a little bit of it. Apparently, it's been climbing the charts on iTunes. So, I swear, they are charging bank for it. But go ahead, you can play it, Drew.
Serious. Mm-hmm. Selected of God choir.
Church is so crazy.
They serious with this. Where's most deaf? Wait, pause it for a sec. You just know the people that were there for this announcement were like, "What?
What is
going on here?
What the hell?
I thought he was announcing his presidency. What's going on here?
Is this the Ben Carson? Are we in the right room?
Are we in the right room?
what day is this?
Wait a second, Jared.
Get a little swag, a little bounce in the choir.
The choir probably had demands. No,
it's all ladies, two dudes.
Oh,
I'm not gonna put any shit on it. They fucking put their foot in that song. All right,
yeah,
good on you.
I think they selected of God done, choir. They had done that song before a couple of years ago. When Clint Eastwood did the voiceover for that, like, Detroit's Coming Back,
I remember,
commercial.
Yes,
they were the choir in that commercial. So they've been doing this song for a while. And also, this was in Detroit, so that makes sense as well.
And they work with Eminem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know if they work with Eminem. I think they just paid them.
No, they
said
that. No, they do. No,
they're on Shady Interscope, whatever.
Well, there you go. Bam. Mm. So we've covered Baltimore quite extensively here on the show, and you know, we went down last week and all of that. And a few things that happened, shockingly enough, where you heard like people that are batshit crazy and are never right about anything ever in the history of time say some coherent ass shit about what was going on down there. So let's listen to one of those people now, one batshit crazy Shepard Smith from Fox News. Discussing the situation in Baltimore with his co-hosts, and be prepared to be amazed, quite frankly.
Shep Smith.
So at least I haven't heard anything from any civil rights leaders, have you?
I heard Alveda King on a little while ago on our air telling her to get people home, that this is not a way to solve any problems. But it seems like in the middle of all of this, to start picking on people for civil rights and what they're saying and what they're not saying, We could spend our time watching this and reporting on it as we have
It might be a nice idea, nice timing for one of the higher profile civil rights leaders who tend to come in after the fact and say, look how bad things were with the police officers. But if they came in now during the thing saying, hey, let's call for peace, let's have some calm here.
That's a wonderful idea. I'm confident they're all watching and will, on your instruction, do exactly that.
Oh,
you mentioned parents. Where are the parents?
Well, you know, I've not been on the phone with them. But if we want to sit here and indict the civil rights community and indict the parents for what we're watching right now, instead of, for now, just covering what happens and then later talk about whose fault it is, because we don't know whose fault it is.
Can I just jump in, Chuck? No one's indicting anyone. We're watching the pictures. Well, we're asking legitimate questions. A lot of our viewers are probably asking the same questions.
Bowling.
Like,
the question was, where are the parents? Surely you don't expect me to know that.
I agree, Chef. It was a hypothetical.
Civil rights leaders. Where's Al Sharpton? Where's Jesse Jackson?
You know what? I also don't know where they are. We've got a major American city that has decades of turmoil within this neighborhood. Decades. You heard the stories from Doug McElway a little while ago of people being arrested for nothing, of a violent crackdown for years and years, of them feeling powerless and hopeless and nobody listening to what they were saying. One quarter of the youth locked up. Clearly there is a big problem. Then all of a sudden an African-American man is taken into a vehicle and he comes out of it and dies. And you get nothing from authorities except a suspension. And then those who would do harm take an opportunity to do harm, and here we are. But it's what has happened between all of that and today that has led to this. There is no escaping that reality.
Shepard Smith. Ding, 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 ding.
Dude, he first of all threw shade immediately, then backslapped the dude. Really? You thought I was going to talk to the parents?
Come on. They're going to call you right away.
I'm sure they'll do exactly what you say. Damn. All right, Shep.
You're talking about people,
a broken clock is right twice a day.
Listen,
so
after the non-indictment and they released some of the information that had been previously sealed for the, you know, I'm putting air quotes around grand jury, fucking Nancy Grace. She was on like, I don't see a bruise. I expected his face to be all injured. How is this a fight? You know, blah, blah. So like, I'm just going to say Shepard Smith from Fox and Nancy Grace are saying there's a problem. Can we all start? Can we at least, I mean, come on.
Well, I saw earlier today that the mayor of Baltimore has requested a Department of Justice investigation into the police department. I'm like, come on. Are we going to have to do this for every goddamn city? Like, look.
The fuck? Nothing happened here in Philadelphia?
Just take what all the reports you already have in your hand, apply them accordingly to every goddamn city and poor neighborhood in this country, ad nauseum, and do the shit that needs to be done to fix it. Like, every city is going to have this process go on. It's a waste of money. It's a waste of time. And why don't you just believe black people when they tell you what's going on in their fucking neighborhoods? How about that?
The fuck? It doesn't do shit. We had the DOJ report here in Philadelphia.
First of all, I'm
not saying it doesn't do shit,
I really have a problem when people say stuff like that because it's not true. First of all, what those reports do is they give you leverage to go to the table and say, this is what needs to be done. And it's not, it's empirical evidence from people that have collected it and can tell you what is occurring. It's not useless. A DOJ report is not meant to tell people that to enact the things that they suggest doing. What it's meant to do is quantify what's going on and give people real solutions to help those things get better. And so you, as a community, would take that and go forward.
I think her timing is ridiculous. It's lip service. She's been doing is been trying to talk out of one side of her mouth to appease what she thinks is her voter base and talking out the other side of her mouth to appease, you know, I don't know what, supremacy. But she's no good. And the timing's terrible.
Hey,
Mel, you got real quiet there. Sorry. I don't know if you're...
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you, but you were quieter than before.
Oh, sorry. I think one of the things that... I mean, they get the evidence, and my thing is, what are you going to do? Like, they've done... Like, they're doing... You know, they it was done in Ferguson. They've, you know, done investigations in different cities. Okay, it's fucked up. Once you gather this, what do you do next? Because I think that's part of the frustration is, you know, we got information out of Ferguson, and then, you know, we still got Freddie Gray, we still got Natasha, we still got, like, it's
I hear you.
Knowing that cops are fucking up black people is not, to me, that's kind of just almost feeding into the oppression porn that people are into these days.
Yeah.
And people want to see action. So you've got the information, you're gathering the information, you've gathered the evidence. Now what?
Well, I'll say we belong to a group here in Philadelphia, the Philadelphia Coalition for Real, that's an acronym, REAL, Justice. And they had at our, you know, I think it was their 12th town hall meeting, a list of maybe 8 or 9 different, you know, really powerful statements, all related to police brutality, all related to, you know, community oversight, independent prosecutors, body cameras, a host of different.
No, you have that completely wrong. What was on that sheet were the recommendations
from
the
department.
I'm saying, but it wasn't the coalition that came up with these things. This is what I'm trying to say to you, is that what these Department of Justice reports do, they make recommendations and say, these are the things we think will solve the problems.
I don't think they were straight from the DOJ. I think they were framed and formed by.
Have you read the DOJ report? Because I've read it.
I have, and their things weren't all recommendations of the DOJ.
Those were their recommendations for each of the issues that the coalition has had. So, and this is the same thing that's been happening in Ferguson as well. What happens is then you start to do the work as a community and say, how are we going to implement these things?
That's what I was saying.
How are we going to make this work? What do we need to do? We need to get, you know, 4 more people on the council so that we have voting power now and we can enact these things. We need to elect a mayor or a special prosecutor or SA that's going to actually allow these things to move forward and progress. I just don't think it needs to be done everywhere because it's just silly. Like, Baltimore should be able to take the Department of Justice reports that the same problems exist in other cities that have reports already done and say, hey, in Philly, these are the things they said we're going to help these things. Let's apply them here. That's what should be happening. It's not that every city needs it. I think it's important to get that information from these higher level sources because they did do thorough investigations. They did pour over all the numbers. They did look at the race of every single person that was stopped for a traffic stop over 4 years in Ferguson. That's not a small thing to have as evidence and to talk about a problem and make it clear that it's systemic, because we do need to make it clear. Numbers do matter. I just don't think every city that has somebody die in it is going to need a DOJ report to make change happen. We need to get past that point. We should have been like, okay, we've had 6 of them now. It's fucking systemic. Let's move on and start enacting some of these recommendations and things that we can be used to address these issues. It's just like, you think DOJ report is some sort of band-aid. They say, oh, well, they called the DOJ in and now it's going to be okay.
That's not how it works. You know, not that the whole report is pointless, but that this, the timing that, you know, anyway. Anywho.
Mm-hmm. But I did get a feeling while we were going through all the stuff in Baltimore that it was like, the Hunger Games a little bit, because two things happen, big things happen while the turmoil was going on, I guess big in terms of social media, in terms of media attention generally, the Met Gala and the White House Correspondents' Dinner. And it was a little strange to see the just
the timeline juxtaposition.
Not just timeline juxtaposition, but even just, you know, the television, you know, where you're seeing like people arriving in their dresses and then, you know, somebody being violently arrested for peacefully protesting, like right next to each other. It was just like very, very strange and shows this obliviousness. And last night at the meeting, one of the women that went from Philadelphia down to Baltimore to protest and she got arrested, she said that they were protesting at one point kind of in the outer part of the city where close to where the baseball stadium is. And she has to go to the bathroom, and the public bathroom that was closest by wasn't useful. And so she went into this Italian restaurant, and it was shocking to her to see all of these white people in like their nice clothes and their shoes having a wonderful, lovely dinner while the city was in complete chaos and turmoil and hurting so badly, but it didn't even fucking touch them. And it gave off this like real life where you're looking at it and you're like, whoa,
capital city,
the two Americas. It's so real. It's so
well. And the true. Young woman that was talking about that said that as they were marching through parts of I think it was Baltimore, through sort of a, you know, like you're talking about, where there's sidewalk cafes and stuff, that she went out of her way to get off of the street and actually go on the sidewalk. And I don't think you were there, Leslie, when she was talking about it, but just was like, no, F that. I'm not gonna let you people sit here and eat your fucking croissant, you know, while we're chanting Black Lives Matter and trying to, you know, make a difference, and you're just going to like turn your back and kind of be coy. So she got on those sidewalk cafes and was like, you know, in their face with it.
I think when I hear it like into the Hunger Games, though, I think if that's the case, we've always lived in the Hunger Games.
This is true.
People being oblivious to what goes on with poor people. Like when black people were enslaved, they were having big old fucking parties, and true. The slaves were serving them. And I'm sure some of those slaves were missing limbs and missing eyes, and you know. So I think though I kind of get the inclination to make that connection. I just think it's different. Now, if those motherfuckers start getting dressed up and sitting from a perch to watch cops beat the shit out of people, I'd be a little more inclined to.
But I mean, in Baltimore, it really was like that. Like, I'm just saying, like, for real, it was that much of a disconnect.
But I mean, they're just totally ignoring them. Like, right. I mean, they're for the most part.
No, they definitely were not ignoring them. I mean, some of them were engaging. You know, there was a lot of that, you know, protest porn situation going on. It's I see this all the time at actions where it's definitely of that nature. But I also think that there's a level of, you know, there's been many instances where something has happened in our country that, you know, the NFL decides they're not going to hold games that night. Or, you know, the Major League Baseball teams, you know, they don't go up that night. Or Broadway dims its lights.
Baltimore played a game with no fans.
Thank you. That's my point, though. My point is that there are plenty of instances where things that have happened to whoever, people, whatever has happened, there's been a reaction.
But those things have happened to people that they care about.
That's true. That's true.
Those things have happened to people that, you know,
matter, quote unquote.
That matter to them.
Right.
So it's, you know, it's somebody, someone, it's typically people of means. And people, like, they don't give a shit about a bunch of black people in Baltimore. They don't. And that would have happened, that could have happened now. This would have been, if there was some sort of action like this 100 years ago, it would have happened 100 years ago. I think there's always been that inclination, oh, this doesn't bother us. The only difference, I think, between now and then is that now we have camera phones and we see it. Like, yeah, now there are camera phones and there are paparazzi and we're able to keep up with it on social media. Like, if there was no social media, we wouldn't fucking know about what's going on in Baltimore. Not to the extent where we would get any version of the truth.
Mm. For sure.
Exactly what people want us to hear. So I think it's that things are more,
but the part of
it in our face,
right? But that's the part that I feel like is the Hunger Games part, because the news is covering, they're showing on a loop, you know, bricks being thrown and all of that. And then they're showing Beyonce going up a staircase. Like, that's my whole, that's why I liken it to the Hunger Games, because there is this idea of people just watching it passively at their homes and enjoying it as part of entertainment for them. And it's okay. That's the part where I feel like it's a little bit different. Yeah, you know, it's not the same as them being right there, but the Hunger Games part of it is that the Capitol was okay. They weren't in the game. They were watching it at home, and it was okay for them to watch this happen in whatever district and these kids doing whatever. And that's where I feel like, you know, people are able to have this detached mentality about it. Because, you know, they'll just watch it ad nauseum, the same loop over and over again of whatever.
Look at Marty. Look, they're in the Baltimore district.
Yeah, but if you see that lie, just like that whole, you know, the Ray Rice video. Yeah, they would play that over and over and over and over again. It's this idea of it's like okay to watch black pain. It's fine to do that. It's entertainment to do that. Maybe. And seeing it juxtaposition with the White House Correspondents' Dinner, with, you know, and so much glee surrounding that from so many, you know, the actual press itself. It's their big ego night that they get to come out. That was just really bizarre, because that was the worst night of, you know, in Baltimore. So it was kind of just weird.
I never even knew that this was such a big deal thing. Until very recently.
They've made it. They've made it. The media, yeah. They wanted it to be, you know, nerd prom and all of that. But that's what's weird about it. That they couldn't tone it down. Y'all couldn't just go to your show and be okay. You know, but you don't need to talk about it that much while this is going on.
I'm not picking sides, but back in like November, December, there was a White House like Christmas tree lighting something or other, and unfortunately I don't remember who, because there was always too many hashtags and too many deaths, but maybe Von der Meyer, somebody died, and so same kind of deal. Twitter's like aflame with, you know, the White House Christmas tree lighting dinner and a bunch of, you know, shit going down in St. Louis and Ferguson. And on my timeline, so like, you know, I follow a bunch of different people, there was these weird sort of juxtapositions, and I took a picture of one, screen capped it, and I didn't at the people involved, because one was DeRay and the other one was Roland Martin. And I was like, man, this is, you know, look at my timeline, blah, blah, blah. And someone like retweeted it and was like, you know, fuck you, Roland Martin. And Roland Martin wrote back, I don't know who the fuck you jerks. Like, he went on like a diatribe. He like chewed me out on Twitter for
he
like
He needs
eight
to take
tweets.
It down a couple notches a lot, though. He'd be going after people on Twitter. He crazy.
He might have, I don't know if he blocked me anymore, but I think he did it for a little bit.
He
was pretty
hot.
Mm-hmm. I was like, dude, I subtweeted you. I didn't need your name. What the heck?
So this ridiculous thing happened. I don't know if you saw in the news, Mel, about these twins from the UK who are biracial, and they are fraternal twins, and one of them looks black and one of them looks white. Very fair,
like
skin, straight red hair, and the other one has dark skin, beautiful curly hair, brown eyes. It's been in the news because it's just been, people are thinking about stuff like
intrigued.
That now. I'm not 100% sure. But this newscaster had them on the show, and her reaction was a little, well, interesting.
We should just let it play. This is in Australia.
Yeah.
One of the sisters is obviously black. The other is white.
The Alma twins come from a mixed race family in the UK. Maria has taken after her half Jamaican mum with dark skin and brown eyes and curly dark hair. But Lucy got her dad's fair skin, good on her, along with straight red hair.
What?
Good on her.
Good on her.
The dude that's sitting next to her shot at this look that was like,
you in trouble.
Oh my God. And you know, she was like, I'm not going to say anything racist. I'm not going to say anything racist. Shit. I said something racist.
Good on her.
Good on her.
Yeah, we don't need to finish. We'll just end it there.
Wow.
You need to hear more.
I don't even know what to say. And the poor girls, they're twin sisters. You know that the one is just like, this motherfucking bitch right here. Did she just say good on you?
They deal with that a lot.
All the time. They probably have to deal with that shit. Oh my gosh. Ooh.
She was so close to not saying something racist.
So close, but didn't work out.
But you know, this
it's like, it's a compulsion. Like, they can't hold it. Like, it's so deeply ingrained, and you can tell the type of people who just like are used to saying all sorts of wild racist shit, just because no matter how much they try to be politically correct,
totally,
it's gonna just fly out at the most inappropriate time. I work in a very conservative environment, and I was at work, and there was the Phileas Baltimore
protest a couple of weeks ago, we have a Philly office, and we got an email saying that, you know, the office was going to close early because they anticipated, you know, blah, blah, blah. And my coworker was like, oh, that's going to be a traffic disaster. Bitch.
The traffic.
Traffic.
Not
a
the
traffic disaster.
Freddie Spine.
And I work in a pretty, like, social corner, so they're always kind of, like, out or whatever. And they've seen me because I've been on, like, the Pittsburgh News and whatever, you know, at different rallies or whatever. I've spoken a couple of times. So they know pretty much what I'm about, and I'm not really here for the bullshit. And so I couldn't stop myself either. So, well, maybe if the cops stop shooting black people, unarmed black people, and killing them, probably won't be any protests like that, and y'all be able to drive wherever you want to.
Wherever you want.
Your Prius will get home.
Everybody went back into their offices.
I bet they sure did. It was like, oh.
I honestly, I wish I worked with someone like you at some point in my life, Mel.
I was about to set it off.
She was about to get Queen Latifah from Set It Off in there and just go nuts.
Oh my goodness. Because I don't, like, I just don't, and that's one of the reasons I have, I guess, kind of a difficult time working where I work, because I've never had to play that political game where I worked with people who were so ultra conservative to the point that they didn't have common sense. Like, what makes you think that my single parent ass is against social programs and you are paying me below market? Like, you
how about
me,
that?
I'm literally getting paid $8,000 below my market. I'll be damned if I'm going to sit up here and have a conversation with your rich ass about social programs
and listen to your bullshit.
And right. I will not. So, you know, so it's funny because typically it's something that they kind of learn to tiptoe around because I don't bite my tongue and I don't mince my words. And so, yeah, but she couldn't hold it that day, and I couldn't either.
Listen,
we
had some former friends that, you know, their, like, combined household net income on an annual basis is, like, you know, multiple six figures. They do really well. And he works for one of these big, you know, Fortune 500 muckety mucks, and he's rising through the ranks. Yeah. And he tells me about turning in some stock, and he had, like, a stock option. And it was, like, over $100,000, a six-figure stock option that he's like, oh, you know, doubled its money, so I figured, blah, 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 and I cash in. And here comes his wife. It's ridiculous. He had to pay so much in taxes. You can't be middle class. You got to either be rich or poor. I was like,
that's the only
whoa.
Way to get by in this world.
I said, hold up a second.
Drew was like, oh, no.
Stop.
No.
Stop.
No, no,
stop.
No.
No.
I wasn't ready. And I was like, you're not middle class, first of all. And you saying that, clearly you have no fucking clue what it means to be poor. If you think people choose to be poor and relish in the activities that are associated with being poor, bitch, you must be crazy. Yeah. I was like, no, that's it. They haven't been in my house since then.
When whenever they talk about finances, they know to get it the fuck away from my desk because they start talking about all this. And I'm like, oh, I guess my financial plan this week is to cross my fingers on hopes and prayers that I don't get a hole in my tights because I can't buy them. So you cheap motherfuckers pay me next week. That's a conversation. I'm like the Debbie Downer.
That's what I'm saying. I wish I worked. I had a bunch of corporate
like
gigs.
Debbie
I needed
Downer
you.
Because whenever they start talking that, because and even like the other secretary who's worked there, she's worked there for 28 years and she doesn't have any children. And she lives in the house that her parents own. So she doesn't have, like, she has bills. It's not that she doesn't have bills.
Right. She also has accumulated wealth.
She has accumulated wealth. Nope. So she doesn't know, she doesn't understand, you know, my situation. So when they start talking all that shit, I shut that down very quickly.
Mm. Speaking of shutting shit down very quickly, apparently the black cast of The Wire / The Walking Dead went crazy this week.
What the?
I don't know what the hell happened. Seth Gilliam, who played Carter on The Wire and was the preacher on The Walking Dead this past season, was arrested Sunday after police caught him going 107 miles per hour in a 55-mile-an-hour zone.
With a doobie.
The Peachtree City Police also found a marijuana cigarette in his car, and he admitted to drinking 3 beers and a shot prior to driving. I think they ended up, he blew like a 1.07 or something like that. And he was arrested on charges of DUI, marijuana possession, reckless driving, and speeding.
157 miles per hour anywhere.
And he's there shooting. They shoot in Georgia. So he's fucking working right now. They're shooting right now.
That was the lesser of the two meltdowns.
Yeah. Yes.
The other meltdown requires some audio because...
Yeah, I have it queued up if you don't.
No, you go ahead. You can play it.
I want to know where my humanitarians are. Yes, I'm Jared L. Coleman. I'm on The Wire, The Walking Dead. I'm not trying to fucking play no game with you. I'm telling you the truth. And yes, I'm an actor. You want me on TMZ? Record it for you. And when you finish recording that shit, tell me what the fuck you mean. My name is Chad L. Coleman. I'm The Wire, The Walking Dead. I'm not faking it. Where is your humanitarian?
Oh, no.
Where is it, brother? Don't tell me I'm making this up. A humanitarian.
Where is your humanitarian?
I'm guessing he meant humanity.
I think he meant humanity. So apparently he was on the subway in New York City, a couple was sitting there deciding if they might recognize him or if they didn't. And they decided they didn't. And they said, no, we don't know that nigga. And that was his response.
I didn't even, was the couple, I guess the couple it seemed like was black.
Yes, I think they were black because if they weren't, the story would have said it. That's what I said too. I was it would have definitely pointed out. And he said brother. So that's the other thing that made me be like, they were just more like, I don't know that dude, man. Fuck that dude. I don't know him.
I don't get it was a lot.
It was so much. And it's like you're on a subway train. It's enclosed. But nobody needs to hear.
The best part, though, that's New York, dude. That's just honestly.
I don't even live
in New York, and I've been on subways with dudes screaming like this multiple times.
Oh yeah, you never know what could happen on the subway. In. I'm from New York, so
Cuddy is a big dude.
He's big.
Anybody who gets if you start getting twitchy and yelly on the subway, I get really nervous. No matter what race, no matter what.
Of course, who doesn't? You're like, who knows what they're gonna do.
And I'm trapped with you.
That's the whole thing.
Where I can tell the the bus driver, where the bus driver is aware of what's going on. Like, we're in this enclosed space, so you could be going ham and nobody knows. And that was a lot. Plus, I don't like a whole lot of noise when I'm trying to go home. If people could wear muzzles on the subway, I'd be so I really don't like, I hate bus chatter when it gets loud. So that screaming would have sent me over the edge. Like, I couldn't. Plus, I'm also an idiot, so I may have started laughing. Like, I don't know anywhere where this would have gone had I been on that train, it would have been all bad.
It could have went anywhere, but just his ranting, saying the wrong word, just, I think I would have started laughing too. I would have been like, oh my God. And it probably would have made him more mad. So I just.
Oh, dude. He's like cracking up.
Situation.
Mel's right. He's a large man.
Like, I might have been like, I think you mean humanity. I think you said the wrong word, Chad.
Could you imagine, like you said, you have like a lot of sisters, and I know when y'all get together and start laughing at people, like you can't stop.
It's like,
I'm just imagining me being on the train with my sisters with all this going on, we'd be dead.
Done. On the floor, crying. It would have been so bad.
Right. He wouldn't even gotten to us. We would have died from laughing.
Oh gosh, yes.
Put this video to him tonight so we can laugh about it.
Exactly. Well, let's pray for everybody else that was on The Wire and The Walking Dead that they do not lose.
That they are lifted up. Jesus, please.
Jesus, fix it. Fix it, Jesus.
Jesus.
As long as Bodie all right. Bodie be on Twitter. I'm all right.
Maybe Phaedra should get involved and just cover them all in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Get it done.
Something.
So. There's this weird thing, right, about, when your smoke alarm, the battery is dead and it beeps?
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. This happened at my sister's house last time we were there, whatever. I would call her and I'd be like, Denise, you don't hear that? She's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, your smoke alarm. I can hear it through the phone. Talking to you on the phone, I can hear it beeping. You need to change the battery. She's like, oh, no. I didn't notice it. Okay, I'll change it. I went to her house a week later. It's still beeping. I said, Denise, you don't hear that? Her husband, the kids, all of them. What are you talking about? I don't hear anything. Like, I'm the crazy one. I'm like, that beep right there. It's loud. You can't hear that? Nah, I don't hear anything. So, I don't know if you listen to the single simulcast, and it's the wonderful host, Rashani. He has a similar issue, and on every one of his shows, you can hear the beeping on the show.
You're going to die.
So, the other day...
This is going to save you from catching on fire.
It's like, yeah, you need to do something about that. He says he's changed all the batteries and everything, but it still is beeping, which means one of them
has 10 years old.
Expired, because they only right. have a shelf life, and they beep then after that point. They're like, yeah, fuck your batteries. We don't work no more. You need to get a new one. But I just couldn't imagine just being like, yeah, I'm just going to let it beep. It's cool. No problem. And then we were listening to the feedback show of the Black Guy Who Tips last week, and another dude called in, and on while he's talking, I hear it beeping as well in his house.
Black people.
Here's the thing. Our dog is like hypersensitive. When she hears the beep,
she freaks.
It starts shaking. She gets really upset.
I can't even listen to Rashani's show. I have to put headphones on.
Even if we didn't hear it, our dog would. Yes. Like, we're listening to the Black Guy Who Tips on like the stereo, and it's like, beep. And she's like, oh my God.
Oh my God. So.
She's scared that y'all are being some crazy fuckheads and not changing your battery. Change your battery.
Come on, people.
And I'm going to apologize in advance for going here, but I know when some of the porn that I frequently like to watch is like more real when it's got beeping in it.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Is that
you're like, that set is like a straight 100. They kept it 100. That's for real. Seriously, dude's all like, I'm going to tear that. I'm going to tear it up. I'm going to beep. Beep.
Everything you planned on doing, my mind switches off and I'm like, oh my God, everybody's going to die. And their parents are going to be ashamed because they were doing booty. You can't die while you're in a fire and you're on a porno set. Like, that's the kind of
And honestly, the reason you watch
could
porno.
Could you imagine you have to go identify your dead child's body? And they're in like a gimp suit from the porno set because God. One of the dumb motherfuckers
the beeping
the battery on the smoke detector. What a waste.
He was just a fluffer. He just wore the gimp suit for fun. He wasn't in it. He wasn't in it. He was a fluffer. He's a fluffer.
He got Mom. Stuck. He couldn't get out. Oh my gosh. Speaking
your
of
latex suit that melted to your body because word. You work for assholes.
Exactly. So, TV movie stuff, two huge trailers came out for some new promos, first promos for some summer shows. The Strain is coming back. I love that show. Did you watch that, Mel? I don't know if you watched it.
I have not watched it.
Oh, it's good. It's creepy. And
is it like horror or is it?
It's more like science fiction-y, so it's vampire type stuff.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, it's about vampires, so.
Is it really, really gross?
Yeah, it's pretty gross. It's one of those gross ones.
Is it grosser than Game of Thrones?
I don't watch Game of Thrones.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know. But, I mean, it's a lot of, like, you know, people's... A lot of bodily fluid, a lot of tongues. They have forked tongues. A lot of, like, things eating things from the inside out. That type of stuff. Mm-hmm. It's like that.
I'll have to give it a gander.
Yeah, it's a good one. It's a good one.
Is it Showtime or HBO?
No, it's on a cable channel. I think it's FX, I think, or something like that. Yeah.
You know, they get pretty gross. Like
they go there.
It's nasty. It's gross. It's nasty.
Because I used to watch Sons of Anarchy. I'm like, God, I might as well just fucking watch Cinemax.
I'll give you, because you say you don't watch it, dude's penis fell off.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They did have his penis fell off.
He's like taking a leak. He's turning into like one of these creatures from like a human, and he's out of urine on his fucking...
Junk fell right off.
Right
that's
in the toilet.
Right, I forgot Sploosh. About that.
My dick fell off.
And they had a doctor look at him. He's like, I don't... have anything for that. It's funny too. It's kind of tongue in cheek. It's good. And then
they show it flapping around in the urinal.
Yeah.
No, they didn't show the urinal. He flushed it.
They flushed it. The sound was, the Foley artist did a good job.
Yes, good sound.
Really good.
Funny.
And then Hannibal on NBC is coming back, and they had a preview for that. I love that fucking show. I'm so excited. But summer TV, you remember when summer used to be like nothing was on? Now it's like 12 months a year. You got new shit coming on. I love it.
Terrence Howard is about to get another job.
How many? Is he going to be in a bad wig in this one too? I've been trying to figure it out from the previews. I can't quite tell.
He's going to have funky hair. He's going to be M. Night Shyamalan is doing a show called Something Pines, Wandering Pines.
Oh yeah, Wayward Pine. I think it's I think it's a Stephen King book or something, maybe.
Well, yeah, they're doing that. It's gonna be him, Matt, is it Matt Gillen?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. The one from The Outsiders.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's Matt Gillen.
Big people. Because I mean, however you feel about Terrence Howard, he's a name.
Oh, he's definitely a name.
He's somebody.
So it's they've got some big names on this show.
Yeah, for sure. And then Gotham had their season finale Monday. I don't know if you watched that one.
I do, and that was, I have been pulling for Gotham all season. And they gave me that.
It was definitely not its finest hour, and I feel like they couldn't decide whether they were going to be a procedural about Gotham, which I think would have worked, or this larger than life, you know, character thing that they've kind of gone towards. And so much of it didn't make any sense at all. I mean, I think they left off on a good foot, and I could see they've already been renewed, so they will be back next season, and hopefully they can fix some things, but I don't know.
But I've been telling people about Gotham and how I was able to enjoy it literally the whole season until the season finale, is that you cannot look at it as a Batman origin story, because it's not. You really have to look at it as Batman fan fiction.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. That is what it is.
Because the timelines for everyone is off.
Don't make it right.
The timeline for Enigma is off. The timeline for Joker is definitely going to be off. And I mean, they'll take certain licenses and do whatever. But it's like the timelines are just off, and you just kind of have to accept that. So that's fine. And when I looked at it from that standpoint, I really liked the show. As a standalone show, I really, really liked the show. I think they just kind of got off the rails with, I just think they didn't have an idea on what they wanted to do with Barbara. And that really threw everything off.
She's
not interesting enough.
No.
And they really tried to make her be a thing. And her character just wasn't, I like the actress. I would have liked to see her portrayed a little differently, but Barbara just wasn't a compelling enough character to do. Like, they had the thing with the girlfriend, and then they had the thing with the serial killer, and I'm just not that interested in Barbara, and I wasn't that interested in their relationship.
Nope.
So that seemed really forced.
And also, are we supposed to believe now that he names his daughter after this psycho ex-girlfriend?
That's terrible. I thought the same thing. Like, what?
That's the other thing.
She's crazy.
If that's the case, he's totally not naming her after, that's totally not his baby's mama, because she beat the shit out of that girl. She's not trying to name that girl Barbara.
Oh, hell no.
So he's going to clearly he's got to have a new love interest.
We'll see what happens.
So, I did kind of like the end scene with Fish's final scene.
Yeah.
One of the few things that I did like, because she really stayed true to who she was throughout the season, and there weren't she stayed true to who she was without being boring.
Right, and
I really liked her character.
There was a twist with her getting spoiler alert, her henchman fucking shit up. Her number two, love you, but I just shot you.
Yeah. And I think that they left it open, because she's already said that she's not going to be back. So she's definitely not going to be a regular character, but I like the fact that they left it somewhat open-ended so that she could guest.
Yeah, and I also like that they had this little a brief connection between her and Selina, because I feel like that would, because Selina, when she becomes Catwoman, you know, she's one of those ride-the-fence type of villains as well. And I could see her not being fond of Penguin, you know, as, on account of this. So there's some play there that I like. I love the little girl. I like the kid actors on the show. That kid that plays Bruce, dude, he is boss.
Yeah.
Boss. I love him. When he slapped the shit out of his.
I was gonna say, I find that shit.
The day he slapped the shit out of his classmate.
Don't talk about my mother.
Don't talk about my mother. I was like, okay, Bruce.
Yeah, I really liked Bruce. I thought that was a good casting. He kind of, because he kind of makes me think of, if you like read the comics and all that, he kind of puts me in the mind of Damien, his son.
Mm.
So I like that. I really thought that she was perfectly cast. I don't know if you ever watched the Batman cartoon, but
like the old school, like in the 80s and 90s?
No, this one was, it was called actually The Batman. So this was more like early 2000s.
No, I didn't see that.
Early to mid 2000s. But the concept art, like the way Catwoman was drawn, I really think that they pulled off of that to cast and create this Selina character. And that's actually one of my favorite renderings of Catwoman. I thought she was great. I thought her look was great. She's cute. She had that little spark. I loved her. I loved everything about her on this show. She was a great cast. They did a good job with the kids.
Yeah, they did do a really good job.
Because they did a good job with Ivy too.
Yep, they did a good job with Ivy, and I'm sure she'll be back as well.
In the damn hell did Edward Nygma pass anybody's psychological screen?
Well, was that supposed to be when he splits? I don't know. He's a weirdo.
Yeah, well, yes. Gotham PD was a shit show. But, like, you don't, like, there had to be something. Like, there's got to be a tell. You don't go from normal motherfucker to, I'm just going to cut up this dude and bring him to work. Like, you don't, like, there's a segue somewhere. Somewhere there.
And then we went to see Age of Ultron. I don't know if you've seen it yet or not.
I haven't seen it yet.
Okay, then we're not even going to talk about it. We'll just say I liked it. Drew thought it was good. He didn't super love it, but he did like it.
How do you not super love it? It's got Thor. It's got Thor.
You know what it is? I'll just say, and this doesn't spoil anything, James Spader.
Well,
really? Because everybody loved it.
I loved it too. Drew is ridiculous with movies. You can't talk to him about movies.
What was that movie that I loved that was stupid with the fucking portal in the other fucking universe?
Time.
I liked him in that shit.
Nah, you're just
Stargate. I like Stargate.
Just ridiculous with movies generally.
No, I just
I didn't
love James Spader. That's
whatever.
All.
I loved him. I thought it was great. You'll love it. So, we are of course podcast standing this week for the Good and Terrible podcast, which again you can find on the Cole Slither Podcast Network on iTunes or Stitcher. You can find them at thegoodandterribleshow.com. Mel, tell everybody where they can find you as well.
You can find me at Beauty Jackson, Beauty_Jackson on Twitter. You can find me on Tumblr, which I really need to update my Tumblr, redbeandreams.tumblr.com. You can occasionally hear me on the Bad Advice Show. I co-produce that. So every once in a while, when one of those guys meet me, I put on my big girl panties and help them out with the laughter and the giggles. And pretty soon, you're going to see me in print because I'm working on my first book.
Oh, wow. Make sure you keep us apprised so we can amplify it and tell people about it. That's exciting. Good for you.
Yeah, that's so
yeah, cool. I'm very excited.
Can I ask what the genre? What are you writing?
Absolutely. This is actually, because I've been writing for a really long time, and I've gone through different how I'm going to, you know, what my first book is going to be, if it's going to be fiction, whatever. But I'm actually a New Orleans native. And I left New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina, and I'm one of the people who I did not move back. I went from Shreveport, Louisiana to Maryland. I lived in Silver Spring and Rockville, Maryland, and then I went from there to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So we're going on 10 years that I have been gone, just kind of watching my hometown from afar. And there's so many stories about people who moved back and rebuilding New Orleans that have been told, and they need to be told. But there's also the story of the people that I kind of consider like expats that those stories need to be told too, because we're kind of watching this place that we love morph into something else.
Yeah.
And and it's just, I think, I don't, if it's, I won't necessarily say that it's untold, but I definitely think it's undertold. So it's not only going to be me. I'm actually in the process of interviewing people, because me talking just about myself, I'm actually almost tired. I'm exhausted.
You're interviewing people that lived and then got displaced by Katrina.
We might have somebody for you. We still live in New Orleans. We lived in New Orleans for a couple of years. So.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we left in 2002.
I'm going to send you the link to my intake form, because I'm going to start doing the interviews. I actually start doing interviews on May 15th.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, we'll pass it on to a couple
and,
people.
And we can talk, because I'm definitely still looking for people, because I've gotten, like, there are people who I know that have stepped up, but I also want to get, I want to pull from a good number of people who I don't know, who don't, you know, don't necessarily have a connection to me, and also
we know multiple people
have a totally different demographic. So,
yeah. Tammy's in Houston. Heath is somewhere else in Louisiana.
Yeah,
we lived in Lake area, Pontchartrain Boulevard, right near my, in fact, our place was underwater. You could go to like CNN and see the before and after. And so we were on Pontchartrain, just on the other side of like West Main, real close to the lake, like four blocks from the lake.
Not too far from Bucktown.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, but definitely pass it on to us, because we will get the people that we do know that fall into that category. If you're looking to find us, again, you can find us on iTunes or Stitcher. Just go to search Interracial John, that's J-A-W-N, or go to interracialjohn.com. You can find me on Twitter at Leslie Mack, that's M-A-C. You can find him at Very White Guy. And I think that's it.
I'm going to just put this out there, Mel, Leslie. This was a long show. I don't know if time flew by. I don't know if it was entertaining. I don't know what people are going to think. I'll just say, one, your smoke detector wasn't beeping. There's that tick.
There's a tick.
There's a plus column.
I do the thing. I do the you know, the daylight savings thing. So I switch my battery.
Oh, okay.
So you do that. Right. Oh,
yeah.
I never thought about that. That's smart.
I think of the ways to go, dying in a fire is like the worst. Oh, so I try to.
It'd be awful.
Make sure that I'm protected against that.
Yeah.
So no fire. No fire.
I think a fire would be in my top three, but so would like at the hands of Leslie. I don't know what method you would choose, but I'm sure it would be horrible. If it got to the point that you wanted to kill me, I would suffer a lot.
She looks like a planner.
Yes, it would go down and you wouldn't like it.
Now, I used to joke that you could tell the difference.
Die at the hands of somebody with a plan.
You could, and it's still sometimes true, but my joke was that you could tell the race of the woman if there's a man that's killed. Like a white woman's going to like poison him, you know, like do some like, you know, far off shit, like his car goes over a cliff, like some sort of insurance scam. Whereas the black one's like, I shot him in the fucking face and the dick. You know, like, and I stabbed him in the throat and the dick.
A black woman is going to kill you and then be waiting at the table smoking or.
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever, waiting for the cops to get here. Yeah, I shot that motherfucker. Let me tell you what he did.
Yeah.
He deserved it.
I cut his dick off and I baked it and then I threw it in the blender and I'm drinking it right now. You ain't putting that shit back on. You ain't gonna John Bob at that one.
Now I want to call the episode Dick Frappe.
Well, you have to tweet it out. See what has better leverage. Dick Frappe or what was the other one?
Poop Flume
or Dick Frappe. I know we had Mel from the Good and Terrible off because those are the two options.
Everybody is going to blame me and rightfully so. God damn it.
Nah, that's awesome. It's a kudos. I love it.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. We so appreciate it. It was so cool.
Y'all are going to have to come on our show. It's going to be super fun.
Anytime.
It's super long and super ratchet.
Anytime you want us.
People, so we'll have to get with you very soon.
For sure.
Yeah, if you ever want to have a white guy, you can call me on and I'll stand for all white people ever.
I believe that you will not be our first white guest.
Boom.
Bam.
Andrew, you won't be breaking new ground.
We try to be equal opportunity. We haven't had a white woman yet. We're going to have a white
lady. Oh, no, don't do that.
Don't do that.
I'm kidding.
Don't do that.
I'm kidding.
Don't do that.
I'm kidding. All right.
I haven't had a white woman on this show either, actually.
We're going to Bennington up the place.
Bennington up the place. What about all the white women?
Get some Uggs.
What about the white women?
Although we had Ijoma and she was a white woman for a week.
She was a white woman for a week, but I don't think that counts.
That doesn't count?
No.
Ijoma Alou is a writer and Twitterer, and we had her on the show maybe like a month ago. And we just, I don't want to say discovered it, but I learned of her when she did a Storify about a woman that, because she's, you know, I guess biracial and lighter toned. And someone said, oh, you're not even black, you're a white woman. And like, so then she went on this comic diatribe like, oh, so I'm a white woman.
Yeah, I did a live reading.
Some pumpkin spice latte and let me buy some Uggs. And oh, look, I have a 740 credit history and all this sort of funny stuff.
I did a live reading of all of her tweets of her. If I'd have known this all the time, now my whole life can change. She did this entire diatribe. About now that she was white, this was all the stuff she was going to be doing. It's really funny.
And she named that episode too, Privilege in a Fur Coat.
That's right. Privilege in a Fur Coat.
I do have a white woman list. If I was a white woman for a day, I do have a list of things that I would do.
Oh, we're going to have to do that the next episode. You come on.
Yeah.
Go through that list.
Put a pin in it.
Let's do that for
Absolutely.
Sure. For sure.
All right. Oh, wait. I got to turn it up.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. High five.